Elizabeth. Well, good morning, everyone. It's so wonderful to be with you. You may be looking at me this morning and thinking, I don't recognize this guy, and that's because, as Elizabeth has just said, I am not part of your church. I am part of a church, don't worry, a church over in Ascot, which I'll share a bit about later, but my main connection with you as Hope Church is I am the son-in-law of Mike and Jane Reynolds, who I'm sure many of you know. Yeah, let's give them a clap. I love that. What a wonderful way. So I'm here with my wife, Eliz, who grew up in this church. Some of you will know her. And also, as you can see, being cuddled at the back by his granddad, my wonderful new baby boy, Judah. So, Bethany, thanks for picking that song to finish off. I mean, he loves that one. I mean, he did cry a bit at the end there, but that was his way of showing his appreciation. But Judah is actually Mike and Jane's sixth grandchild, and so as you can imagine, they can do the whole grandparent thing with their eyes closed. And so when Mike and Tony asked me to come and speak to you, me and Eliz were like, great, a weekend of free childcare and all I've got to do is speak for half an hour. That is a deal we're willing to take any day of the week. So my goal this morning is to speak so well to be invited back every weekend and we can just kind of have blitz. No, I'm joking. That's not the reason I'm excited to be here. The reason me and Eliz are actually really excited to be with you is because, of course, over the time that I've dated and then got married to Eliz, we have spent some weekends with you over the years, and I have to say, every time we come and spend a morning with you, we are struck by the joy that's here. As I say, I'm part of a church over in Ascot. I'm privileged to be one of the pastors that helps pastor that church. But man, do you guys have a thing or two to teach us about worship? I mean, I just love coming and being with you and sensing the joy in the Spirit. Love seeing your passion for prayer, praying for our government. I love the words coming forward. I love seeing that your children are involved with you. It's such a place of God's presence. I just want to encourage you with that. And if all I can do this morning is just kind of chuck a few logs onto the fire of what God's already doing here, then that will be enough for me. And my prayer as I open up the scriptures is that we'll just see a bit more of Jesus, see a bit more of God's wonderful glory, and we'll be led to worship him as a result. So that leads me on to what I'm going to be speaking about this morning. Now, you may have caught that my son is called Judah, which might be an indication to you that me and Eliz love the Old Testament and the stories in the Old Testament. Judah is, of course, a character that we meet in the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible. But I did think that it might be a little bit self-indulgent to speak on the story of Judah. And so instead of doing that, I'm going to do the next best thing and talk on the story of Joseph to you this morning. So if you do have a Bible or a phone or whatever, do open up to Genesis 37. If you don't have a Bible, don't worry. The words will come up on the screen when I read them in a second. But the story of Joseph, I imagine, is one that for many of us, maybe even most of us, is quite a familiar story. Maybe it's a story that you read when you were a child, or it's a story that you've read yourself in the Bible, or maybe you're just familiar with it because you've seen Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical, I don't know. But the story of Joseph is one that has kind of stuck in the popular imagination. Most of us, I imagine, are just familiar with the general contours, if not the specific details of this story. And that's because, you know, the story of Joseph is one that has everything. You know, it has sibling rivalry, it has scandal, it has an underdog story, there's dreams, spiritual things going on. It's an exciting story. But the thing is that like many stories in the Bible, kind of underneath the surface level of just sheer entertainment and wonder and fascination, there lies a deep well of meaning and truth and revelation for us to dig into and discover. And what I'd love to do with my time this morning is just try and plumb the depths of that well a little bit as we go through this entire story. Particularly, what I want us to see this morning is that the story of Joseph can act as a mirror for your life. So what I want us to see this morning, the story of Joseph, although the experiences he goes through are very unique to him. I mean, I hope none of us get sold into slavery in Egypt. But whilst the experiences he goes through are unique to him, they are actually a reflection, I believe, of the common human experience. So what I think we're going to see this morning as we look through Joseph's story, that it is kind of like a mirror reflecting back to us our own experiences in life. And as such, it can also offer us vision for the future and how we'll live into 2022 and beyond. So what I want us to do this morning is just walk through the story. I want to pick up four key experiences or four key themes in the life of Joseph and see how these both explain to us where we have come so far in life and the experiences we've gone through, but how they can also offer us vision as we head into the rest of our life too. So with that said, I'm just going to read Genesis 37. The words will come up on the screen. I'm afraid I realized this morning that the translation I've put up here isn't the same that I'm going to be reading from. So if you get a bit confused, maybe just close your eyes and listen to me read it. But hopefully they're fairly similar. But this is what it says. Genesis 37 says, "These are the family records of Jacob. At 17 years of age, Joseph tended sheep with his brothers. The young man was working with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought a bad report about them to their father. Now Israel," that is Jacob, another name for Joseph's dad, "Israel loved Joseph more than his other sons because Joseph was a son born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe of many colors for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of them, they hated him and could not bring themselves to speak kindly to him. And then Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more because he said to them, 'Listen to this dream I had. There we were, binding sheaves of grain in the field, and suddenly my sheaves stood up and your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to mine. Are you really going to reign over us?' his brothers said. 'Are you really going to rule us?' So they hated him even more because of his dream and what he had said. And then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. 'Look,' he said, 'I had another dream, and this time the sun, moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me.' He told his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him. 'What kind of dream is this that you've had?' he said. 'Am I and your mother and your brothers really going to come and bow down to the ground before you?' So his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind." So this is the first way that we are introduced to Joseph, this young man. And already in this passage, I think we can see two key themes emerging in Joseph's life. The first theme is that of destiny. It's the first experience we see Joseph go through in his life. It's that of destiny. Joseph is a man, a young man, marked out with a great destiny. You see that most clearly in, of course, the dreams that he has. Joseph has two dreams, one where his brothers are bowing down to him, and another where his brothers and his parents are bowing down to him. So clearly, Joseph has a future ahead of him, it seems, of kind of leadership, of rule, of reign. But actually, this destiny of kind of ruling and reigning is actually hinted at even before Joseph has those dreams. And it's hinted at in the robe that Jacob gives to his young son, Joseph. Now, I know that you've only known me for a few minutes so far this morning, and I hate to be that guy that, you know, goes into the Hebrew of the Bible and spoils stories that we have known and loved for many years, but I'm going to do it, because in this story, we're told, aren't we, in most of our translations, that Jacob gives his son, Joseph, a robe of many colors, or a technicolor dream coat, as Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical puts it. But, you know, in the original language that the Bible was written, that word translated many colors or ornate or whatever it might be actually probably doesn't mean that. More likely, what this word means is it means long-sleeved. It's what we see elsewhere in the Bible when this word is used. It's used to describe a robe or a piece of clothing that has long sleeves. Now, I know what you're thinking. Simon, you've just made this story really, really boring. And I imagine if Andrew Lloyd Webber called his musical, you know, Joseph and the Long Coat, it probably wouldn't be a box office sellout like it is. But it's actually a really significant detail. Why? Because who wore long sleeves in the ancient world? You guessed it, it's people who ruled. Kings, really. You know, if you were someone who wore a long-sleeved robe, that was because you weren't someone who was getting stuck into the fields, rolling up your sleeves, getting down and dirty. No, it is someone who was sitting in a palace, administrating, ruling over a kingdom. And so any angle you look at Joseph, you can see he's a man with great destiny. He's a man called to rule. But now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Simon, I thought you said that Joseph's life was going to be a mirror of my own. But I've got to tell you, Simon, I don't have a call to rule on my life. You know, that there's no royal blood in me. I don't think I've got a destiny of being, you know, the next monarch of the country. But you know what? The Bible, if you say that, the Bible would actually disagree with you. The Bible says that inherent in what it is to be a human being is to have a call to rule. To have a call to reign with God. See, the first time we're introduced to humanity in the Bible comes right at the beginning of Genesis, the first chapter. And this is what God says over humanity after he creates them. He says this, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and every creature that crawls on the earth. The first thing God says to humanity, he says, I want you to rule this world with me. It's what it is to be human. It's to have a call to reign with God, to be his number two, as it were. And again, this might sound strange to us, but I actually think it explains some of the deep feelings, deep longings that many of us have. You know, don't you experience sometimes that longing just to have an impact on the world, you know, to live a life of significance, to even, we might say, I just want to be great at something, whether it's in the work, and in the field of work you're in, or in family life, or in reputation, or in something. We want to leave a legacy. We want to do something with our lives. Maybe some of us feel this very keenly. You're kind of sitting here this morning with looking into the new year thinking, I have got plans of what I want to achieve. I want to do this in my workplace. I want to do this in my city. I want to do this in my church. I want to live lives of impact. But maybe for others of us, maybe because of what we've been through in life or negative words spoken over us, this kind of feeling is just a bit more subtle. Maybe it just kind of lies dormant in us. But even if that's the case, I think there are moments when it kind of bubbles up. You know, they had that moment of listening to a song like Queen's We Are the Champions or David Bowie's We Can Be Heroes. And you kind of, there's something that just bubbles up and you think, yes, I want to do something. I want to have an impact on this world. Let me tell you, if you've got dreams, if you've got aspirations, the Bible doesn't condemn that. Bible says as part of what it is to be God's creation, to be his image in the world, he's called us to rule. But here's the thing. We know, many of us, don't we, that whilst we have this desire to have an impact on our world, that our reality is quite different from that. I mean, the dreams we have of achievement or of significance, of living lives of impact, often our lives are far away from attaining that. And what we see in the story of Joseph is that his experience was the exact same. Because the second theme we see arise here as we meet Joseph at the beginning of his life is what I've called the theme of devastation. So at the end of this story that Joseph's brothers hate him intensely. Because of these dreams he shared and the favoritism that his father shows him, they detest him. And as you may know, what that leads his brothers to do is that they kidnap him, they beat him up, they chuck him in a pit, and then they sell him into slavery to the ruling empire of the day. And Joseph finds himself serving in the house of an Egyptian official named Potiphar as a servant. So here is this man with a call to rule, a call to have impact on his world, to lead his mother, father, and brothers. And here he is at the bottom of the pile serving an Egyptian official. You think, man, this guy is as far away from his dream as he could possibly be. But actually, as we read on, we see actually Joseph's life, he just descends further and further away from that. Because what happens next in the story is that Joseph actually serves Potiphar well. He's so diligent in his service of Potiphar that he actually rises the ranks, and you think, oh, maybe Joseph's going to attain his dream. But then, as we know, Joseph is taken down by a lie. Potiphar's wife accuses him of trying to abuse her, and Joseph finds himself descending back further and further, and he finds himself at the bottom of a prison in Pharaoh's palace. You think, wow, talk about being far from your dreams. Joseph is at the lowest of the low at this point. Far from ruling over a country, he is in the prison of a foreign country. You think, wow, Joseph has faced devastation. And whilst, you know, as I say, Joseph's experiences of life are unique to him, I think this is a reflection of what we all experience to some extent. We all experience having dreams of impact, but also, for some reason or another, not being able to be, not being who we're meant to be, not being where we want to be. You can see this again by looking at the first humans, Adam and Eve. You know, right after God gave them this call to rule the earth, to subdue it, to be kings and queens on the earth, what do we see? They are taken down by a lie. Serpent comes to them, one of these animals they're meant to be ruling, and he lies to them, gets them to disobey God. And where does it lead them? It leads them far away from their destiny. They find themselves naked, divided between themselves, outside of the garden they're meant to be ruling, and dying. But even without looking at Adam and Eve, I think we can see this just in our own lives. Maybe you are someone this morning who has had dreams, had calls on your life, maybe from God, and had a sense that, yes, this is what I want to do, this is what God's calling me to. And yet maybe because of your own failure, weaknesses in yourself, or maybe even sin that has been done against you, you find yourself living far from that dream. It's devastation. This is what it is to be human. It is to have a call to rule, a call to reign with God, a sense of that on our lives. But it's also to live in a world of mess, to live lives where we aren't who we're meant to be. It's why we don't just have plans for the new year. It's why we also, many of us, have resolutions at this time of year. It's because we know we're not who we're meant to be. We know we're not where we're meant to be. But of course, the question comes, well, how do you respond to that? This is where we find ourselves as people, with great dreams, great destiny, and yet not there. How do we respond to that? Well, if we just go to the next slide, I think the response many of us take to this is to take the path of what I call striving. Try to take our lives into our own hands and work our way back up to where we're meant to be. We seize the day, we grab hold of life by our hands and do all we can to exalt ourselves, to pull ourselves up, to make ourselves who we feel we should be. And you know, that in one sense, the Bible doesn't have much against this. You know, the Bible is, you know, all for humans ruling and reigning and using their gifts and talents to do what God's called them to do. But the Bible